Tango Tango Papa 2068, April 6, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening. I guess it's this evening, early evening, from Haw River, North Carolina. So, I guess it hasn't really been that long since the last podcast. When did I record the last podcast? 3:28. So yeah, it hasn't been that long. Why am I making a podcast so quickly? Well, I have this friend in Lincoln, Nebraska. His name is Ken, and I've known him, I don't know, quite a number of years now. I met him originally through the podcast, because I don't remember exactly the details, but I think he ended up contacting me, obviously, and then ended up, you know, kind of meeting him in person, since he's in Lincoln, and, you know, I go through there on a fairly regular basis. And so for quite a number of years, I've been, you know, I would stop in Lincoln, and then he would... you know, I'd park out at the the trucking company corporate office, the yard, and he would drive. It was out on the edge of town. He would drive out there and pick me up, and then we would go eat somewhere, you know. And so we had a variety of places we'd go eat, and sometimes he'd stop at Best Buy or Walmart, and then other times, if I didn't have any time, he'd bring me back to the truck, and then I'd go on my way. So, I've been, you know, kind of talking back and forth, you know, in between times on Voxer. He's one of the people I talk to on Voxer, and sometimes several times a day, and then sometimes every day, and then there were times when it was, you know, a few days would go by or more, and, you know, and so it was... fairly regular, but sometimes some days would go by. So, the last time I talked to him was on the 19th of March. That's the last time I talked to him. I talked to him several, you know, kind of back and forth. We had a conversation, back and forth conversation on the 19th of March. And then I didn't hear from him anymore, and I didn't really think that was odd necessarily, because like I say, there sometimes he would just, you know, it would be maybe a few days before I'd hear from him again. So in the meantime, on the 20, I think I got home on about the 25th, I think, or something like the 25th or 26th, and I, you know, still hadn't heard from him. But while I was home this last time, I was actually pretty busy, quite busy. And so I came back to work on April the 30th. So you remember, the last time I talked to him was on the 19th. Came back to work on the 30th. And so I thought, well, it's been a while, you know. So I sent him a message on Facebook Messenger. Didn't hear anything back, no response. Sent him a text message, no response. And, you know, I thought that's kind of weird. And so, finally, you know, another day I think went by, and then on the 31st I tried calling, and the phone rang. His phone rang like 10 times. And then it went to voicemail, and that first call I never left a voicemail, but I figured since the phone was ringing and it didn't, you know, it just didn't automatically go to default to voicemail if the battery was dead, because it was a cell phone, then it would, if the battery was dead, then it would go right to voicemail. But in this case, it rang like 10 times and before it went to voicemail. So I was thinking, hey, this is kind of weird. So I knew the name of the apartment complex where he lived, and so I called the apartment complex manager. And of course, they knew, you know, they knew who I was talking about, and I kind of explained to them that normally I would hear from him on a fairly regular basis, but you know, now I tried contacting him. His phone, you know, would just ring and ring and ring before it'd go to voicemail. No response, and that's just absolutely not like him, because normally he'd be very responsive. So they said, well, so I called the apartment complex. That was April the 1st in the afternoon. And she said, well, we'll check on him tomorrow. You know, because they could have checked on him on the, you know, on April the 1st. But I thought, well, you know, I told her, don't make a big deal out of it, you know, because maybe he has his reasons for not responding. But, so in any case, I received a call fairly early, you know, it was like 9 o'clock Eastern time, 9:30 Eastern time a.m. on the April the 2nd from a sheriff's deputy from Lincoln, Nebraska. And it turns out that my friend Ken had died. He was dead in his apartment. Now, Ken had a number of medical problems. He was on a Navy disability, like a medical disability. And so he had, one of the things that he had was trigeminal neuralgia, which is a nerve issue. He had some sort of a skin problem somewhere that, you know, that had kind of, I don't know, kind of came and went. But the big thing was he had ended up in the last few years, he had ended up with a couple of heart attacks, and he was, had, you know, he's supposed to be on different medication, and he also had a bunch of stents, maybe like upwards of 12 stents. Because it, you know, they did it, you know, a couple different times, you know, the first time, and then he had another heart attack, and then they did more stents. I don't think the second heart attack was as serious as the first one, but so in any case, I was able to you know, I talked to the deputy a second time, because couldn't find Ken's Facebook account, and so I, you know, explained to him how to find it, and so I asked the deputy a couple of questions. Was the phone plugged in? Yeah, it was. The phone was actually in the bedroom, plugged in. The television, his television was turned off. Ken was on his couch with his laptop computer. And that's where he died, right there. I'm guessing he just had probably a massive heart attack, and that was it. And, you know, so the only question is, how long was he there? How long did he sit there? Now, one of the people at the apartment complex, I guess it was an employee at the apartment complex that I spoke with, said that she thought she had seen him on the 22nd. She thought maybe she had seen him either walking to or from his car on the 22nd. But I definitely spoke with him on the 19th. So, normally I would have probably, if nothing was wrong, normally I would have talked, he would have talked to me again on Voxer before the 22nd. So I don't know. But in any case, I guess they're going to do an autopsy to find out, because I think they can kind of pretty well tell with an autopsy how long, approximately when was the date of the death. You know, so then they can determine how long he was sitting there in the apartment. The other thing I asked the officer, was there a smell? And he said, oh yeah, there was a smell. And so then the apartment manager, the woman called me back yesterday afternoon, and just to make sure that someone had called me and, you know, notified me that Ken had died. And she said that she had had someone, his stuff was still in there, but she had had somebody come in, like Servpro, S-E-R-V-P-R-O, had Servpro come in and kind of try to get rid of the odor. So, but his stuff is still in there, what stuff he had. And then also he had a storage bin that she wasn't aware of, I'm sure, you know, because I knew he had a storage bin. I didn't know where it was, but maybe she can, you know, they can kind of go through his things and find out where the storage bin is. So, you know, and the other thing, you know, Ken knew that the heart problem that he had was pretty serious, you know, and he joked. In fact, the last time I think I saw him in like February, I looked back through my records, I think I saw him on February 3rd was the last time I stopped through there, and he came and picked me up, and then we went to Olive Garden, and he, you know, and then afterwards he brought me back to the truck. And even then he was joking, one of these days you'll probably just not hear from me, and you can just assume that I died. You know, and he even had the idea that he'd probably die in the apartment, which that's actually what happened. So, kind of sad. As far as I know, he didn't have any relatives that he knew of. He was adopted. And his adoptive parents were a German couple that adopted him at some point in the late 60s, because he was in his early 50s. So he was born sometime in the late 60s, mid to late 60s. So this German immigrant couple had adopted him. They lived in Lincoln, Nebraska. They adopted him. And so he you know, of course, those records are sealed. He did not know who his parents would have been, or, you know, the natural parents, but both of his adoptive parents died. The dad died first, and then his mom died, I guess, about 4 years ago. Now, this woman this female apartment complex manager said that Ken had told her that he had a son. Now, he never, ever, ever mentioned a son to me, that he had any kind of kids of his own. So I don't know. It's possible that they can go through his things, and if he had a son, it's possible that, you know, that they can figure out how to contact the son. I have no idea. What's interesting, Ken had designated me with medical power of attorney, meaning that if he went into a coma, for example, that I could determine, you know, if they were going to pull the plug or not. But of course, there was no coma. He died, and, you know, he just kind of dropped dead of a heart attack right then and there. And so there was, you know, medical power of attorney was not needed, but I don't think he ever told me that he is designating me with medical power of attorney. That was kind of a bit of a surprise. In a way, and then in a way it wasn't, because in a couple of cases he had designated me as a reference when he was looking for a job, and I've got contacted at least twice, two or three times maybe, with prospective employers checking on me as a reference. Somebody that knew him. So, but, it happens. It's unfortunate. It's kind of sad. But those things happen. And, such is the way of the world. But it's interesting, because it kind of got me to, thinking about it a little bit, of course. What is the meaning of existence? What really is the meaning of existence? Is our existence, is the meaning limited to what we do, who we interact with? Is it limited to that? Or is the meaning of existence to be found in kind of how can I say this, because it's going to sound the same, I'm going to say how we interact with the world, but beyond, forgetting about the external part, the people we interact with, the experience, well, I'll put it this way, is the meaning of life our experience of existence? Is the meaning of existence to be found in our experience of it? And it may be the latter. Sometimes people want to think, well, I left some kind of a legacy with this or that, but with other people, and then the other people, going to remember you or whatever, but inevitably they're going to forget. And the vast majority of us just kind of pass into total anonymity. So what what is the meaning of existence? The meaning of existence, I think, has to revolve around our experience of it. But then, is it an egotistical experience, or is it a kind of a godly experience? Are you actually able to experience a relationship, kind of a one-on-one relationship with your Creator? And that's one of those things that only you can know, or only I can know. So, anyway, while I was home, what did I do while I was home? I bought a deep freeze, for one thing. 5 cubic foot deep freeze, bought that at Lowe's. I found this company in Conway, Arkansas that sells beef directly from this farm. And I don't think I mentioned this in when did I say the last podcast was? So I don't think I might have mentioned this already. So if I have, forgive me. Well, 28th, I don't know if I did or not. So anyway, I bought a quarter of beef. I haven't taken possession of it yet. I had to put $200 down. And then I'll pay for the remainder of it, basically when I take possession of it. So that's roughly 100 pounds worth of meat that's been freeze, you know, it's vacuum sealed, frozen, different cuts of meat. And so that's going to fit into the 5 cubic foot chest style deep freeze. So I've got that. The Ozarks Go, the fiber internet, got it. I've actually got an appointment now. They're supposed to, because the next time I'm going to be home, I told them I wanted to be home by the 27th. And so should be home on the 27th. And then I've got an appointment at 8 a.m. on the 28th. And they will install the modem inside my house with an Ethernet, that, you know, and the modem has an Ethernet port, and then I can just plug the router, because I have the Eero, E-E-R-O, Eero mesh router system. I'll simply plug that in to the fiber modem, and you know, I'll have the same network. You know, well, it's going to look the same Wi-Fi network. And then I can call up the phone company and cancel the DSL. So, Windstream. So anyway, got that. Yeah, so while I was home, the guy, you know, this guy came, or these two guys came, and they dug a buried line from the electric pole to the end conduit. They buried it from the electric pole to the house. And then so then when I was leaving home the other day, I left in the morning on the 30th, and right as I was about to leave, this guy came, another contractor for, you know, it's called Ozarks Go, another contractor came, and he was going to install something called a NIB, and I think I may have mentioned this before, Network Interface Box, probably the acronym. He's going to install that on the side of the house and then check and make sure that he had a signal back to the central office. So got that coming, and then the other thing, I've got, I want to hopefully get the guy to come back and install the vinyl flooring in front of the French doors. So then that problem will be solved. And then so I got several things going on while I'm home, you know, plus other things while I'm home this next time, towards the end of the month. And so and then I'll come back to work and make more money and figure out more ways of spending it. And I'm sure I've got other things that I want to around the house that need to be done and need to be taken care of, and so I have every intention of taking care of them. So continue to work. So anyway, I have a Voxer file from Joel. So here is Joel.
Hey Tom, Joel McLaughlin here. I'm currently driving back to my apartment after getting my first COVID vaccine. The system, or the store I used, was a local department store, well, a superstore called Meyer here in Ohio. Well, they started out in Michigan, but in any event, they had by far the best system in my local area for scheduling the vaccine. And a lot of them, it was basically first come, first serve, and you scrummed for whatever appointment you can get. And that did not work well for a lot of the stores up here. a lot of times, like one of the other department stores, they had this little queuing system for their website. And you go in and you get so far and then you discover they had no appointments. So Meijer did it the smart way. They basically took your information down, gave you a text, or you put your phone number in and they would text you when they had appointments available. Not only would they text you and they'd actually have them available, but basically, you know, they had opened it up like for a big cohort of people. So just a big group of people. And they divide that out over the time. You walked in, well, it became your day, showed them your information. They put you in a line, the socially distant line, of course. And then you get your vaccination in your arm. I got the Pfizer vaccine. And then they'd make you wait 15 minutes in case there was any reaction. And then they said you can go, told you to expect a little soreness in the arm. And you might have run a low-grade fever and feel tired. So feel tired is good. You know, if I feel tired in the evening, hey, no problem. I'll just go to bed early, you know. So we'll see how all that works. The vaccination itself was painless. I didn't even feel that needle go in the arm. So, the deed's done, and they automatically scheduled me for dose number 2 of the Pfizer vaccine, which will be in 3 weeks. I think it's at April 20th. So I'll be completely vaccinated before we end up going to our move. So, but my thoughts on it, I think that's the system that worked the best. The other ones, well, like I said, it was just a free-for-all. Now, some states, they have a deal where you have a centralized website, and then they tell you where to go, all right? Ohio's not that way. They basically, Ohio gives you a list of places you can get it, and you can go get it. Zero cost. Didn't cost me nothing. My wife is probably not going to get it. She doesn't want to get it. She doesn't trust it. I'm fine with it, you know. Obviously, I went and got it. So, and anything I can do to return my life more normalcy after this, the better. You know, one thing I wish is that Fauci, the Democrats, and other people would stop using this as a political football. Fauci, I didn't trust him when it was the Trump administration. I don't trust him now. He hasn't really practiced medicine in actual medicine in a long time now. He's a politician. So, any event, I'm happy. Hopefully, before the end of summer, we have this thing beat, because I'm ready to just have a normal life with regards to not having to wear a mask when I go to the freaking store.
Thank you, Joel. So my parents both have gotten the first part of, I think they got the first part of the Pfizer, and then soon they'll be getting the second part. One of my younger brothers has probably already gotten the first part of it. I'm not sure. I've got a friend that's gotten both parts. He's 75, maybe 75, 76. So he's gotten both parts of it. I've got another friend that's gotten at least the first part of it, maybe both parts, and he's probably about, you know, same He's in his 70s, so it's kind of the same thing. My dad's youngest sister, you know, she's the only one that's remaining, you know, his only sister that's remaining alive, because originally he had four sisters and one brother, so there were six kids altogether. Counting my dad, three of the, you know, the three older daughters are already dead. But in any case, his youngest sister, about 75, 70, I think she's 75 or 76, she's received the first part of the Pfizer vaccine. So, now Ken, the guy that died, had received the first part of the Pfizer vaccine. But, you know, he didn't die of the vaccine. He died of a heart attack, I'm sure. I'll probably never hear the results of the autopsy. I tried to get that deputy to, you know, maybe he'd call me back or whatever and tell me, but probably not. Because why would the coroner contact the sheriff's department back to find, you know, I don't see that happening. So probably never hear from anything, and then there won't be an obituary. So, I don't know how you would find out the details, you know, because people, what that tells me is that people die probably all the time and may not have an obituary, and you may not, you know, maybe the, you know, I had another friend, and this happened back in 2016, I had this other as a truck driver friend, that, you know, once in a while he would call me, and one time he was a Schaefer driver, that's how I met him, but he would call me once in a while, and or I'd call him, and we'd chit-chat on the phone, you know, for a while, conversation, and but then I, one day I was kind of perusing around on Facebook, and I, you know, came to his Facebook page, and he had a bunch of relatives, and they were all, there were all these posts about how sorry they were that he died, you know, he died, and I had no clue. His name was Lonnie Walden. He had a kind of a strange last name, Waldens, W-A-L-D-E-N-S. Lonnie Waldens. Now, if you look him up in Google, you'll find some references to him. Like one of his, you know, his mother or his aunt died, and then he's mentioned in other people's obituaries. But I could never find any kind of an obituary for him. So that tells me that there are probably a lot of people that die that there's never an obituary for. Then the other thing that I wonder is how many people actually die, let's say in a house or an apartment, and then a period of time goes by before they figure out that the person's dead in there. And I'm guessing that that's happening all the time, and it doesn't even make the newspaper. Because if you type Ken's name into Google, all that pops up is a reference to his adoptive parents when they died, because they had some, you know, I think either the mother or the dad had an obituary, or maybe both of them did. But, you know, and so he's mentioned there, and that's the only time that his name pops up. So I'm guessing there, you know, and you'd think, well, wouldn't that be newsworthy in a city like Lincoln, Nebraska? Wouldn't that be newsworthy if they found a body in an apartment that had maybe been there for a week or two? Apparently not, because there is no news story. the only reason I knew that he was dead is because they were nice enough to call me, you know, call me and tell me. So then yesterday when I was talking to that apartment manager, the woman, she said that what ends up happening, you know, because Ken had a bunch of friends, he was a fairly social guy, so he had other friends, you know, his barber and, you know, different people. He was really friendly with people, you know, and he knew them. And so she says that, you know, once they figure out, they know where someone lives, and so then they'll call the apartment manager to, you know, kind of find out if they know anything about them, because all of a sudden they're not showing up anymore. And that's not something you'd think about an apartment manager having to do, but then it kind of does make sense, because if, you know, if a tenant dies, which they apparently do, they suddenly die and there's no obituary, and then you're going to have people know that they live there, they're going to be calling to see if somebody can tell them what happened. But I'm kind of guessing that must happen all the time, you know, where people are dying in houses or apartments and nobody knows. You know, some time may pass before, you know, before they figure out that, hey, there's a problem. So I've actually got a friend that's a retired policeman. Next time I'm home, I'm going to, next time I'm able to talk to him, I'm going to run that question by him. How often does that happen? And I'm betting that he comes back and he tells me fairly often. So, anyway, the vaccine thing, I really don't care about it. I know some people have made a big deal out of it, one way or the other. I really, you know, don't care about it. I'm not, you know, not worried about it enough where I'm going to rush out and try to get it. And I'm not that anti-vaccine. I know some people, oh, you're anti-vaccine. No, you're trying to put words in my mouth. Just not that excited about it. Is it, you know, and I don't know. Is it, and of course I can frame it probably as well as anybody can, is, you know, and this is probably more of an extreme way of framing it, is it a really great idea to try to manually tweak your immune system? You know, now that would be one way of framing it. And it might be. Maybe in the, you know, like in the case of a tetanus vaccine, yeah, it's probably a good idea. Polio vaccine, maybe the same way. You know, some of the other vaccines, maybe the same way, but, so I don't know, this is more, you know, the coronavirus is more of a common cold virus, so I don't know. I'm kind of inclined to just sort of ignore it. But you do have people that are trying to make as much political hay out of this as possible. You've got people that are trying to use the vaccine as a part of a social credit score, you know, so-called vaccine passport. You can't do this, you can't do that unless you have the vaccine. You know, you got to be able to prove you had the vaccine, so that's like a social credit score. Maybe they won't give you loans if you can't prove that you had the vaccine. I'm sure there are people that are thinking that way. Well, I know there are. Do I think that's going to happen? No. I really don't. A lot of people, you know, are, you know, still kind of walking around with the masks. Most of the places I go now, you know, they're either not wearing a mask themselves, or they're not saying anything to, you know, anybody. When was it? Yesterday. think it was yesterday, I went in a Denny's restaurant and the gal said, "Do you have a mask?" And I didn't have one in my pocket. And I said, "Nope." So she handed me one and then I put it on with my nose fully exposed, walking into the, you know, from the front of the restaurant to the table, and then I promptly took it off and put it in my pocket, still in my pocket. Went around all day today, no mask. And I'm going, you know, I'm in different states. You know, the other day I was in, well, it was on April the 2nd, I was in Manassas, Virginia unloading. And that's a suburb basically of Washington, D.C. It's right out on the edge of the Washington area. And, you know, I would have thought that they'd been, you know, kind of big gung-ho mask people. Well, no, not really. That I walked into the receiving office and the employees in the receiving office weren't wearing a mask, so me neither. Now, some businesses can require, you know, they can say that require, like, you know, Flying J, Pilot, Love's, Truck Stops, most all of them, you know, they've got a sign on there, please wear, you know, mask required. Well, I walk right in there with no mask. There are other people that are doing the same thing and they don't say a word. And a lot of times they've got their masks pulled down around their chin. And what you've got to understand, the masks aren't doing anything. They really aren't. And I rather doubt that the vaccine does anything either. But that's just my opinion. And the other part of the vaccine thing is, let's wait. You know, I want millions and millions and millions of people to get it. And then let's see if, you know, what the side effects are before I'll even consider something like that. What's the hurry? What's the big hurry? Why all the pressure? Generally speaking, if somebody's trying to pressure, it's been my experience over the years, is if somebody's trying to pressure me into doing something, if they're trying to apply some kind of psychological pressure, then I'd better be watching out, because they're trying to manipulate me for some ulterior motive. You know, so it's never a good idea to act out of pressure. Bad. That's an alarm. Alarm bells should be going off anytime someone tries to, you feel someone's trying to apply some sort of psychological pressure to you. And I don't care if you think they can say, well, it's for your own good or whatever. Sorry, don't be trying to pressure. You know, don't be trying to pressure me. That's, you know, I'm not going to respond to that. Maybe I will, maybe I won't, but sorry. Take your pressure and, you know, stick it where the sun doesn't shine. But as far as, you know, some businesses are going to keep doing the mask. They're going to keep their signs up for a while. It doesn't, you know, even in states like Texas that have dropped the mask requirements altogether. I think Arkansas is about to, you know, has or is about to do the same thing. Drop the mask requirements. Well, there may, you know, individual businesses may still, you know, they can still require it if they want to, you know, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to enforce it. If they're going to enforce it, then yeah, I've got, you know, either hand me one or I'll whip it out of my pocket or whatever. When I was home this last time, I went in a Sam's Club and I didn't have the mask in my pocket, and so the gal handed me one and I put it on and I went about, you know, got my stuff, and but I put it on with my nose exposed, so it was just covering my mouth, which is worthless. It's It's worthless if you cover your nose anyway. If you can smell through those masks, then you got to realize that the virus particles are way smaller than odor particles. So, you know, it's a theater of the absurd. Texas, of course, has dropped the mask requirements, and suddenly their case count is going down. You know, and oh, Fauci can't explain that. Gee. The other thing, I've made this suggestion over and over, turn off the media, turn it all off, get rid of the, you know, because it's just a bunch of propaganda. What is propaganda? It's lies and it's pressure. It's basically people trying to manipulate you. Turn it off. They're trying to pressure you. The biggest danger that we face, I've said this over and over again, the biggest danger that we face is mass hysteria. And mass hysteria goes right hand in hand with emotional pressure. Emotions are a form of insanity. They really are. So, anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off, see if I can get it uploaded. Sorry for all the background noise, this load that I have, it's a continuous run. So that's running, and then I've got the windows down right now, and so there are trucks beside me that are idling. So there's quite a bit of noise, and, it just is what it is. So, never really been fond of that phrase, but what the hell is it supposed to mean? But anyway, it's just something that can't really be avoided. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.